To the average person, the name of Miska Gild is associated with slight and possibly amusing eccentricities. For example, he once went down Regent Street at 11 o'clock at night at 60 miles an hour, crippled two unfortunate pedestrians, and smashed a lampstand and his car. The charge that he was drunk failed because, indisputably, he was sober when he was dragged out of the wreckage, himself unhurt. Nevertheless, an unsympathetic magistrate convicted, despite the conflict of medical evidence. Miska Gild went to the sessions with the best advocates that money could buy and had the conviction quashed. Once he went to Paris, and the French police most obligingly hushed up a lurid incident as best they could. But they couldn't quite hush up the death of the pretty chorus girl who was found on the pavement outside the hotel, having fallen from a fifth-floor window. But they were very helpful in explaining that she had mistaken the French windows for the door of her sitting-room. Nobody at the inquiry asked how she managed to climb the balcony. The only person who evinced a passionate interest in the proceedings was one Henry Arthur Milton, a fugitive from justice who was staying at the hotel. Not as Henry Arthur Milton, and certainly not as the Ringer, by which title he was known. Indeed, he bore no name by which the English police could identify him as the best wanted man in Europe. Mr. Gild paid heavily for all the trouble he had caused divers police officials, and came back to London and to his magnificent flat in Carlton House Terrace quite unabashed. One bright November morning, the second footman brought his breakfast to his bedside, and on the tray there was a registered letter. The postmark was Paris. The envelope was marked urgent and confidential, not to be opened by the secretary. Miska sat up in bed, pushed back his long yellowish hair from his eyes, bleared for a moment at the envelope, and tore it open with a groan. There was a single sheet of paper, closely typewritten. It bore no address, and began without a conventional preamble. On October 18th, you went to Paris, accompanied by a small party. In that party was a girl called Ethel Seddings, who was quite unaware of your character. She committed suicide in order to escape from you. I am called the Ringer. My name is Henry Arthur Milton, and Scotland Yard will furnish you with particulars of my past. As you are a man of considerable property and may wish to have time to make arrangements as to its disposal, I will give you a little grace. At the end of a reasonable period, I shall come to London and kill you. That was all the letter contained. Miska read it through, looked at the back of the sheet for further inspiration, read it through again. "Who the devil is that Ringer?" he asked. The footman, who was an authority upon such matters, gave him a little inaccurate information. Miska examined the envelope without being enlightened any further, and then, with a chuckle, he was about to tear the letter into pieces, but thought better of it. "Oh, send it up to Scotland Yard," he commanded his secretary later in the morning, and would have forgotten the unpleasant communication if he hadn't returned from lunch to find a rather sinister-looking man with a short black beard, who introduced himself as Superintendent Bliss from Scotland Yard. "About that letter? Oh, rot, you're not taking that seriously, are you?" Bliss nodded slowly. "So seriously that I'm putting on two of my best men to guard you for a month or two." Miska looked at him incredulously. "Do you really mean that? But surely... My footman tells me he's a criminal. He wouldn't dare come to London." Superintendent Bliss smiled grimly. He dared go into Scotland Yard when it suited him. This is the kind of case that would interest him. And he recounted a few of the Ringer's earlier cases. Miska Gill became of a sudden a very agitated young man. "Monstrous! A murderer at large, and you can't catch him? I've never heard anything like it. Besides, that business in Paris, it was an accident. The poor silly dear mistook the window for her sitting-room door." "I know all about that, Mr. Gild," said Bliss quietly. "I'd rather we didn't discuss that aspect of the matter. The only thing I can tell you is that if I know the Ringer, he will try to keep his word. You're to employ no new servants without consulting me. I want a daily notification telling me where you're going and how you're spending your time. The Ringer is the only criminal in the world, so far as I know, who depends entirely upon his power of disguise. We haven't got a photograph of him as himself at Scotland Yard, and I'm one of the few people who have seen him as himself. At first, Miska treated the matter as a joke, but as the weeks became a month, the sight of the detective sitting by the side of his chauffeur, the unexpected appearance of a Scotland Yard man at his elbow wherever he moved, began to get on his nerves. And then one night, Bliss came to him with devastating news. "The Ringer is in England," he said. Miska's face was ghastly.
How do you know?"
he stammered. But Bliss was not prepared to explain the peculiar qualities of Wally the Nose, or the peculiar behaviour of the man with the red beard. Wally the Nose came one night furtively to Inspector Starbridge at the local police station, having been sent for.
"Well, there's going to be a bust at Lowe's at Jewellers in Islington tomorrow, Mr. Starbridge. Some lads from Notting Dale are in it, and Elphus is fencing the stuff. Is that what you wanted me about?"
He stood, turning his hat in his hand, his ragged coat almost touching the floor, his red eyelids blinking. Starbridge had known many police informers, but none like Wally. He hesitated, and then with a, "Wait here," he went into a room that led from the charge room and closed the door behind him. Superintendent Bliss sat at a table before him. "Does he know why you brought him here?" he asked. Starbridge grinned.
"No, I put him on to inquire about a jewel burglary, but, well, we knew all about that beforehand."
"Bring him in." Wally came, shuffling into the private room, blinked from one to the other with an ingratiating grin.
"Yes, sir."
His voice was shrill and nervous.
"This is Mr. Bliss of Scotland Yard," said Starbridge.
And Wally bobbed his head.
"Oh, heard about you, sir,"
he said in his high, piping voice.
"You're the bloke that got the Ringer."
"To be exact, I didn't," said Bliss gruffly. "But you may."
"Me, sir?"
Wally's mouth was open wide, his protruding rabbit's teeth suggesting to Starbridge the favourite figure of a popular comic artist.
"I don't touch no Ringer, sir, with kind regards to you. But I can't help nosing, sir, and that's a fact."
"You can do a little nosing for me," interrupted Bliss. And thereafter, a new and a more brilliant spy watched the movements of the man with the red beard. He had arrived in London by a ship which came from India, but touched at Marseille. He had on his passport the name of Tennant. He travelled third class. He was by profession an electrical engineer. Yet, despite his seeming poverty, he'd taken a small and rather luxurious flat in Kensington. It was his presence in Carlton House Terrace one evening that had first attracted the attention of Mr. Bliss. He came to see Guild, he said, on the matter of a project connected with Indian water power. The next day he was seen prospecting the house from the park side. Tennant was traced to his flat, and he was apparently a most elusive man, with a habit of taking taxicabs in crowded thoroughfares. What Scotland Yard might not do officially, it could do and did do unofficially. Wally the Nose listened with apparent growing discomfort.
"If it's him, he's mustard," he said huskily. "I don't like messing about with no Ringers. Besides, he hasn't got a red beard."
"Oh, shut up," snarled Bliss. "He could grow one, couldn't he? Now see what you can find out about him. If you happen to get into his flat and see any papers lying about, they might help you. I'm not suggesting you should do so, but if you did..." Wally nodded wisely. In 3 days he furnished a curious report. The man with the red beard had paid a visit to Croydon Aerodrome and had made inquiries about a single-seater taxi to carry him to the continent. He'd spent a lot of his time at an electrical supply company in the East End of London and had made a number of mysterious purchases, which he'd carried home with him in a taxicab. Bliss called that night at Carlton House Terrace and found Mr. Miska Guild a very changed man. These 3 months had reduced him to a nervous wreck.
"'No news?' he asked apprehensively when the detective came in. "'Has that wretched little creature discovered anything? "'By gad! He's as clever as any of you fellows. "'I was talking with him last night. "'He was outside on the terrace with one of your men. "'Now, Bliss, I'd better tell you the truth about this girl in Paris.'
"'I'd rather you didn't,' said Bliss. "'He wanted to preserve at any rate a simulation of interest in Mr. Guild's fate.'
He'd only just left Carlton House Terrace when a taxi cab drove up, and Wally the Nose almost fell into the arms of the detective on duty outside. "'Mr. Connor, Mr. Connor, where's Bliss?' he squeaked. "'That red-whiskered fella's disappeared. Left his house, he shaved off his beard, Mr. Connor. I didn't recognise him when he come out, and when I made inquiries, I found he'd gone for good.' "'The chief's just gone,' said Connor, worried.
He went into the vestibule and was taken up to the floor on which Mr. Guild had his suite. The butler led him to the dining room, where there was a telephone connection, and left Wally the Nose in the hall. He was standing there disconsolately when Mr. Guild came out.
"'Hello, what's the news?' he asked quickly.
Wally the Nose looked left and right. "'He's telephoning to the boss,' he whispered hoarsely. "'But I ain't told him about the letter.'
He followed Miska into the library and gave that young man a piece of news that Mr. Guild never repeated. He was waiting in the hall below when Connor came down.
"'It's all right. They arrested old Red Whiskers at Liverpool Street Station. We had a man watching him as well.'
Wally the Nose was pardonably annoyed.
"'What's the use of having me and then putting a busy on to trail him? That's what I call double-crossing.'
And Wally, grumbling audibly, vanished into the darkness. The once red-bearded man sat in Superintendent Bliss's private room, and he was both indignant and frightened.
"'When you came to England, you were broke, Mr. Tennant,' said Bliss, "'and yet immediately you reached London, you took a very expensive flat, bought yourself a lot of new clothes, and seemingly have plenty of money to travel on the continent. Now will you explain that?'
The man hesitated.
"'Well, I'll tell you the truth. "'When I got to London, I was broke. "'But I got into conversation with a fellow at the station "'who told me he was involved in engineering. "'I explained my power scheme to him, and he was interested. "'It wasn't the kind of man I should have thought would have had any money, "'yet he weighed in with £200 "'and told me just what I had to do, "'take the flat, where to go every day, and what to do.' I didn't want to part with the old beard, but he made me do that in the end, and then gave me £300 to go to Holland.
Bliss looked at him incredulously.
Did he also suggest you should call at Carlton House Terrace and interview Mr. Guild?
Tennant nodded.
I tell you, it made me feel things weren't right. I wasn't quite sure of him, mind you, Mr. Bliss. He was such a miserable-looking devil. A fellow with rabbit's teeth and red eyelids...
Bliss came to his feet with a bound. "'Wally the Nose!' he said. A taxicab took him to Carlton House Terrace. Connor told him briefly what had happened.
"'Did Wally see Mr. Guild? Not that I know.'
Bliss didn't wait for the lift. He flew up the stairs, met the footman in the hall.
"'Where's Mr. Guild?'
"'In his room, sir. Have you seen him?'
"'No, sir. He hasn't rung for half an hour.'
Bliss turned the handle of the door and walked in.
Miska Guild was lying on the hearthrug in the attitude of a man asleep, and when he turned him over on his back and saw his face, Bliss knew that the true story of the chorus girl and her suicide would never be told.
The Man with the Red Beard by Edgar Wallace was read by Edwin Richfield. The producer was Nigel Bryant.